Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
He is one of the most demoralizing opponents in the history of professional sports that could possibly be imagined. Here to talk about that and more is Zach Harper of FanRag Sports, the back-to-back podcast. He is on Twitter at Talk Hoops. He's on the Bernstein and McKnight show. I mean, Zach, what do you possibly do in response to that?
Wasn't there a hotel that like gave Kobe Bryant food poisoning during like the Kings Lakers series?
Yeah, I remember something like that.
Yeah, I'd start there because I really don't know. Once you get to the arena, I don't know what you do.
You have to outscore them. I mean, there's no amount of defense. They switch everything. Don't switch everything. It doesn't seem to matter. And for a moment, you know, injuries aside, the Rockets had time where they outscored them. But it doesn't seem as though LeBron has any sort of meaningful help to put up enough points to scare anybody here.
Well, that's the thing, is the Cavs have actually done a really good job in past finals. I mean, well, last year didn't really matter, but in the two previous finals, they did a really good job against Curry by being very physical with him off the ball, like grabbing him, clutching him, you know, bumping him every chance they got. They were very physical with him. You know, Dellavedova did this. Kyrie Irving did this to a degree. J.R. Smith did it. Tristan Thompson was huge in this with the way he kind of helped defend, come around screens, kind of push things out instead of letting Curry catch the ball comfortably. And that got him a little bit out of a rhythm. There was the injury, too, that got him out of rhythm and everything. But, you know, they were really smart with the way they defended. This team is not smart in how they defend. They don't have the personnel. Like, George Hill should be a really good defender. It doesn't seem to matter against Curry. You know, Jordan Clarkson's not going to come in and do any of this stuff. So they don't really have the personnel to do it. They don't have the system or the scheme to do it. They don't have the awareness and the attention to do it. You're right. It's just, hey, can we outscore you? Well, they're missing all these open shots, too. So they really can't do anything on that end of the floor either.
It also seems like Cleveland has to get that defensive rebound every single time, because with this team, you can do everything right for a full shot clock and have one tiny slip up on a closeout, on an angle, on an assignment, and it's 3 points. And then you got to start all over again. I mean, just the feeling of getting it all right, getting a miss, and then having it tipped out again, and the Warriors get to reset everything. Like I say, I keep getting back to the emotional letdown that it must be, and the amount of concentration that you have to keep up to keep doing everything right then again.
Oh, I mean, any offensive rebound with them becomes a horror movie, right? Like, every offensive rebound becomes a sudden, like, you see the shot misfire, and there's got to be a sense of relief there, but then you see the ball go into, let's say, Draymond Green's hands on an offensive rebound, and in that moment, now it's, oh no, where are they, right? Like, where did Klay Thompson go? Where did Kevin Durant go? Where is Steph Curry? Like, what is going on? And to be able to relocate that, get to those guys before they get the ball, because they only need a sliver of space, if that, to get a good shot off. I mean, there's really that does have to be the most demoralizing part of, we finally got a stop against these guys, except they kept the ball. Oh no.
So, Zach, there was a moment in this game in the second quarter, I think it was a little later in the second, and Van Gundy kind of pointed this out. Klay Thompson kind of dove into Kyle Korver to draw a foul. You know, that kind of offensive set where the defender's coming, like whether it's off a switch and gets up in the air, and Klay realizes that, kind of dives after it. And Van Gundy made a kind of impassioned defense of defenders and how, you know, we were starting to take this rule out. We were starting to not give these fouls to the offensive player, just kind of seeking contact like that. I don't know that it necessarily changes the Warriors if that rule changes because of the shot-making ability they have, but I wonder where you stand on how those fouls are called in this league and whether that's a big deal in what we're watching or not.
It is a big deal. I mean, to me, this is the most egregious you know, kind of foul call that there is in the NBA right now, or any kind of call. Like, people complain about traveling because they don't really know the travel rule, right? And so they don't know about the gather step, and so they think everything's a travel. People, you know, flopping, you know, no one likes flopping, and you know, what a cowardly way to defend, and they need to fix that, or they need to fix block charges or anything. No, to me, it's the the pump fake, and then you jump in unnaturally into a defender, and all of a sudden you're going to the free throw line. I think it's the worst call in the NBA for sure, but in, you know, maybe in professional sports, because there is no natural moment in that. Now, if a guy jumps in the air and jumps into your space, and all you're doing is going straight up for a normal shot, and you take that contact, yeah, it should be a foul. But, you know, Kevin Love does this. You know, a lot of guys do this, where they will pump fake, they will jump to the side to get their shoulder, like they're throwing, you know, some kind of block on a football field, mm-hmm. into the defender, and then go up for a shot, for a, you know, a fake shot, and all of a sudden they get the free throws. Like, that is a call the NBA has to eliminate.
Is there any recourse here for the Cavaliers, any in case of emergency break glass way of playing this game? Anything more they can do in the risk calculus, or is this just a slow death no matter what they try to do?
I mean, it's pretty much a slow death no matter what they try to do. Well, actually, maybe a pretty quick death. We may only have two more games for this. But, you know, I've kind of thought that they need to just replicate the 2015 model once Kyrie was out, once Kevin Love was out, where they, I mean, they'd slowed that 2015 finals down to like 85 possessions a game, like just really slow pace, and try to grind it out and try to, you know, really muck things up. Like, I think that's what they should do. That's really the only way they can do it, because the Warriors don't play as well in slow games as opposed to games with a lot of possessions. And the Cavs don't really have the personnel or the firepower to keep up with this Warriors team. So you really kind of just have to eliminate all rhythm and flow to the game and hope LeBron is good enough to take you to a victory.
Do you feel like that's kind of what LeBron was trying to start? I mean, the Warriors played so well, it might not have, they dictated pace and tempo and all that jazz. But I wonder if LeBron, with his 29 and 13 assists, and we saw him play a different, you know, we saw him play that kind of playmaking game that he's got. Do you feel like that's what he was trying to do, trying to establish for the Cavs?
Yeah, I think so. And they just missed so many. They just missed so many good looks that he created. I mean, he should have had 25 assists in that game. It was, you know, I thought he actually did a really good job of trying to dissect that defense. But there's only so much he can do. You know, 51 point game didn't matter because of, you know, the George Hill miss and the J.R. Smith taking a knee, essentially. The game last night where he probably should have had 20, 25 assists didn't matter because this guy's in his shots. Like, I don't, at a certain point, I just don't know what he's supposed to do.
We heard LeBron James make a joke about, asked about, I guess, something Dan Gilbert tweeted, and then LeBron very dryly added, "Are you sure it was his actual Twitter account?" And then he gave himself the little rim shot sound effect with an actual little pantomime mechanic thrown in there. And when you have the most sought after free agent, who was going to be a potential target of the Philadelphia 76ers, making a Brian Colangelo joke at the at a press conference, doesn't that mean you pretty much should have fired this guy yesterday? Or do you still think it's possible that Colangelo survives this fiasco?
Well, two things. One, I didn't see any of those Dan Gilbert tweets because he blocked me on Twitter years ago. So that's all. Yeah. So I didn't get to see any of that. So I didn't really get the joke until I knew that LeBron was making a Colangelo joke. But in terms of Colangelo, like, I'm really shocked that he hasn't resigned at this point to kind of like save face a little bit. Cause I do think this is heading towards him being removed from the front office in some way, either with them firing him or them giving him a chance to say, like, you know what, you can say, I don't want this distraction being around. I will remove myself from the situation. Because whether it was his wife or whether it's his, you know, him registering the accounts in his wife's name or whatever, or I guess there's a slim possibility he has nothing to do with any of this and some elaborate bot program that Sam Hinkie designed. And, you know, as soon as he was fired from this, or as soon as he was removed from this job, I'm sure that's a possibility. But with Colangelo, like, I don't know how you get away with this in any way, whether it was you or not. Because in the Twitter age, we're all just going to believe it, right? Like, he could have a perfect alibi on all this, and we're just going to, I think he did that. I think he was sending those tweets.
Since we're in that spot where we've got to think about, you know, maybe the quick death or slow death of the Cavaliers, regardless of how it happens, it seems a fait accompli. You've got the Sixers and a situation there that they've tried to make ready for LeBron. The Houston Rockets are a thing. Where should LeBron put his energies and efforts into after this finals is done? Where is the situation that he can go and fight the Warriors and grab that next ring, in your opinion?
I mean, I think he should stay in the East, and he needs to find a team that's pretty loaded, and I think that's Philly. You know, if Philly still has plenty of holes, and they still have, you know, they still have to make a trade probably to bring in another, you know, veteran all-star type player, whether that's Kawhi Leonard or whether that's rolling a dice on DeMarcus Cousins down the road if he shows he can be healthier, whatever that ends up being, whoever that ends up being, a high-level player that you can move a lot of these assets and young players for. I think that has to happen. But, you know, the idea of going to Houston, I like it. You know, they got to gut a bunch of contracts out of there, but I like the idea of him going to Houston, trying to get to the Warriors before. I like the idea of him going to the Lakers, bringing Paul George with them, sending three of those young guys out of there for another all-star, and saying, all right, well, I'm gonna build this Lakers mystique back up. Those are all fine options, but staying East, right, you know, kind of almost demands that you keep going to the finals, even with as good as Boston may be. And then on top of that, Joel Embiid's really good. Ben Simmons is going to be really good, and they can go get another all-star without having to upset that core. Like, that just seems like a no-brainer to me.
Is there any possible narrative that LeBron decides to turn towards the torpedo and say, there's going to be a statue of me outside the United Center too. I'm going to take on all of this, all the Skip Bayless ridiculousness and all the idiocy, and I'm going to go make the Bulls a contender right now?
I don't think there's any chance of that, but I do like that idea. Like, once LeBron admitted, like, oh yeah, I'm chasing this ghost. You know, I'm chasing Jordan's ghost. Like, this has been my goal. Like, I want to be the best ever. Ever since he kind of admitted that, I kind of like the idea of him just saying, you know, I want to go do this. Like, well, I want a bigger statue. Mm-hmm. You know, next to Michael Jordan's statue. Like, let's do that. Like, I'm bigger than Michael Jordan anyway. Like, my statue should be, you know, to scale. Like, I like the idea of him just kind of deciding to you know, throw his old headband on whatever mm-hmm. Michael Jordan paraphernalia he can and say, no, this is my league now. Like, this was Jordan's league. This is my league now. It's going to be my league until someone else comes along and we start having these conversations about them.
That would be so cool. I mean, that you talk about the real gangster move right there would be to do that. No matter what, Zach, and we are talking with Zach Harper, NBA expert from FanRag Sports, that it seems like this time around he learned his lesson from the decision, how poorly that was handled, how bad the optics were, and how long it took him to recover. Do you get the feeling that this is going to be a much quieter, much more professional process?
I think so, because just look at what we saw in 2014, right? Like, no one really saw him going back to Cleveland or, you know, leading up to that. And then once it became a possibility of, like, oh no, he may really go back to Cleveland. Like, we're stalking Dan Gilbert's private jet. You know, we're doing all these things to figure out what's going on. Once that became the ordeal, and then he had Lee Jenkins pen the essay of "I'm coming home." I think that's when you saw a maturity for that process with LeBron. I personally didn't have a problem with the decision. You know, raising the money for charity and all that stuff. We've celebrated National Signing Day. You know, for years with high schoolers, and all of a sudden LeBron at, you know, 25 years old or whatever, however old he was, says, okay, I'm going to do this now. And we're like, whoa, professional athlete. We that's for high schoolers. We don't do this anymore. I didn't have a problem with it, but I do like the fact that he's kind of quieted that aspect. And it's just much more businesslike.
It's kind of instructive, though, that the three of us have entertained the Rockets, the Sixers, and even a Bulls fantasy before we've entertained the idea of him potentially staying in Cleveland after this, isn't it?
I don't mind the idea of him saying, you know what, I'm just going to do this every year. Like, I'm going to sign a one-year deal with Cleveland every summer, and then unless it's a no-brainer for me to go to whatever top team has the ability to acquire me, I'm going to hold Dan Gilbert's franchise hostage. Mm. Because LeBron is all about empowerment. He's all about player empowerment, black athlete empowerment. Like, he's all about all these things. And to go in and say, you know what, Dan Gilbert, I remember that essay. I remember it being on the Cavs website until I decided to come back and save your franchise from you. I remember all this stuff. So for the next, you know, 5 years, I will decide every summer where I'm going to go, and we're just going to do this one-year deal thing, and good luck trying to figure out the next step with this organization with me hanging over in this way. I like that bit of empowerment. Like, if we're talking about LeBron kind of spitting in the face of, oh, I want to go be on the Bulls and overshadow Michael Jordan in some way, that's an even you know, more gangster move than that.
I'm with you on that, but is there any way that he realistically can pull a title back to Cleveland if he continues to put – given what that franchise is and what they have contractually committed to other players, is there a way he actually can make the basketball decision of Cleveland being the right place?
Their books are actually not that bad once you get to next summer. I mean, it takes Kevin Love opting out. You know, you have to waive, you know, J.R. Smith and George Hill and guys who don't have fully guaranteed contracts. But they actually have, you know, quite a bit of cap space, or the potential for quite a bit of cap space or flexibility after next season. It would just then require, like, is this team good enough next year for LeBron? Probably not, right? And so that's the tricky part, is how do you navigate having that flexibility versus still remaining a competitive team that can make the finals. I mean, that's a very tricky situation for Kobe Altman.
Zach Harper, thanks as always, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Zach has been brought to you by KFC. This summer, get a KFC Extra Crispy $20 fill-up. The meal includes 8 pieces of extra crispy chicken, plus all the fixins. This offer's not everywhere and not forever. Prices may vary. Tax and substitutions extra. The Cubs will be starting a series against the Philadelphia Phillies tomorrow. And the pitcher of note signed in the offseason away from the Cubs, Jake Arrieta, is not happy. And there's a lot going on with this story. I think it's what it says about Jake, what it says about the Phillies, and in some ways, what it should say retroactively, perhaps, about the Cubs, I think is worth discussing.
I think it says something about the Phillies, too, and where they wanted to be, what that expectations is. You know, we talked a lot about this season and how raised expectations means you're dealing with a franchise now with where the kid gloves have to come off. A lot of teams this offseason weren't ready to do that. Weren't ready to approach the offseason the way teams like the Phillies or the Brewers did. So I think there's some kudos to get thrown out. It's just we got to wade through a little bit of tough talk to get there.
Yeah, strong stuff from Jake Arrieta. You'll want to hear it. Keep it here on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.